You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be back, and once again up in the Flagstaff Mountains area, so taking a little break from the Phoenix heat here at 7,000 feet.
Yeah, I don't know how you deal with 118 degree Fahrenheit temperatures. That's like 45 Celsius. That's insane.
Well, you know, my life story is, you know, I've been all over. I used to live in Chicago when I was working in brokerage firms and a former trader on the Chicago Board Options Exchange. And I was there for, gotta be about 13 years. But we had some winters, 80 below wind chill, and just the opposite situation. So you're not standing out in the weather, or you try to minimize it and get into a heated building or car. So it's just the opposite in Arizona. So as long as the power is working and there's what is known as air conditioning, so, you know, you work around the heat. But and it's great in the summer. I mean, if you like swimming and you like warm water, swimming pools, it's great. You know, it's a good time of year to go swimming, unless you like cold Pacific Ocean type water, then obviously it's not your cup of tea. But anyway, yeah, that's where we're at today. Thanks for mentioning it. Yeah, taking your break here.
And our condolences to the fans and family of Hulk Hogan, who passed away.
Yes, I heard that. Already got the news moments before you and I spoke a few moments ago. I just saw it on the news. It's very depressing. It just makes me feel that much older and vulnerable, you know, when you see somebody who was so physically fit, even though I think it was through you that he took a lot of steroids and stuff, but at 71, I'm 77, so makes me feel even more depressed. But anyway, very sad to hear that happen.
Now, what's going on in the stock markets, the reason we're here to talk today?
Okay, well, there's a new moon right above us this moment. You can't see it because it's a new moon, the 24th of July. And I also want to mention before we get into that, July 21st was my 46th year. It was also my birthday earlier this week.
So oh, happy 40- birthday. I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, so thank you. But it was also the day I launched my volume reversal VR Trader newsletter back on July 21st, 1979. So that sort of dates me here a little bit, I suppose. But I've been around and still at it. So anyway, today, the 24th, there's a new moon, and the markets are acting a little funny today. And so it looked like they were topping out a little bit, a little overbought here. Just a short-term comment, so very mixed market, and I think had to do with the cycle that came in, and there's some indications that, you know, we could be running into a little negative cycle here. You know, this historically doesn't always work, but, you know, September, October is negative in the markets, and sometimes it could start before that. We've had negative August as well, so, you know, markets are really high here, and so the S&P 500 posted a new all-time high today and yesterday. The Dow Industrials did not, and other indexes like the Russell 2000 did not, though the NASDAQ did. So you're getting some non-confirmations. You got the new moon up there. So, you know, you might experience a little pullback here. But I'm going to remain bullish because, you know, the legislation that's gone through and the overall pattern say that we're not done yet. You're just going to have to pick your entry points because obviously we're extended after the big sell-off we saw in April and the big recovery that we've had, but there's still stocks out there to look at. But I think, you know, you just hit a little caution flag here today. So it might go beyond today. We have to look at the numbers and see if perhaps we're going to start a bit of a correction from these levels, and it may be very short or it could be bigger, so we just have to monitor it day to day. But my overall feeling is it's not over till it's over, and the indicators have it all across the board turned negative or anything like that yet. So I guess I'm going to remain bullish but cautious here just a little bit because we're so extended and we just hit a little bit of a cycle point. But anyway, that's sort of where we're at with the general stock market. And as you know, it's always a matter of stocks within a market, and there's some individual, you know, stocks that are doing well, particularly in the uranium nuclear area, for example, like this big stock GE Nova, ticker symbol GEV, making nuclear reactors. The stock, I think, was up 80 points yesterday. It was even up another point today, if I'm not mistaken. So getting more orders than they can handle to build nuclear equipment. And, you got the GE name behind it. So there's another one that was also hot today, ticker symbol OKLO, Oklo, is also in the nuclear area. So, you got bastions of strength, and there's reason for that, obviously, because of the government's push and individual companies' push for more energy needs. Suddenly, there have been so many years where everybody was so anti-nuclear, and I just laughed at them. It's like, we know it's the answer. We know it's the future. There's only so much, fossil fuels out there, and even if you like them or don't like them, it's not the most efficient way of generating energy. Nuclear had proven that for so many years. We know military, military uses it. The Navy, the submarine ships are nuclear powered. So the public attitude toward it was so ridiculous, in fear of being fried with a nuclear accident. And the ones that we've seen, except for Chernobyl, really weren't that bad. So there's going to be accidents anywhere in any event. Of course, you had Fukushima in Japan, and that was the result of a tsunami and an earthquake. So it wasn't the nuclear itself. It was act of God with nature causing a tremendous event there. But it only makes sense. I dream of the day where we have nuclear or fission-powered automobiles like we saw in Back to the Future, So we don't have energy demands and needs and depending, on antiquated sources of energy when we have so much advanced technology. But the reason all this happened, we know, Jim, was suddenly AI came along, and the demands of power that companies need to produce and generate all the AI analysis involved computer power of a significant level, which really didn't exist. So a company like Microsoft goes ahead and funds the rebuilding or renovation of Three Mile Island nuclear facility, which is going to still take, I'm sure, another couple of years till it's up and running, but billions of dollars being put by private industry just to obtain the needed power for the AI explosion. So that became the motivating factor. Not so much, hey, nuclear is the best source for energy and the most efficient and so forth. It was just pure capital greed and demand for the power to be able to expand their businesses. Of course, the government got behind it too. So uranium is not over, and that's still, hot area. It's going to take time to get all these plants up and running and equipment installed. But the examples I just mentioned, it says they can't even handle the orders that are coming in for the nuclear-related stuff. So that's still a big, big topic here in the, with the market. So anyway, that's what's going on in the market here short term. A little extended, but still in an uptrend, and everybody's thinking nuclear.
Are copper prices going up because of threatened tariffs?
Supposedly. That the tariff, from what I understand, encourages use of domestic copper versus foreign copper, but it should help the local producers, particularly a company like Freeport-McMoRan, which is actually based in Arizona, one of the larger copper companies, and Southern Copper, another, but they're outside the U.S., so they're not benefiting as much. So domestic copper, at least here in the U.S., could help the companies, and I think support the price of copper, which is doing very well. I think it's at record highs the last few days from what I saw. So, yeah, we like Freeport because that's been a big name and a stable in the industry forever. So not too far from here, where I'm actually broadcasting, some of the larger copper mines, one in particular, a little town called Jerome, not too far from Sedona. I was up there visiting it the last few weeks, seeing it again. It was shut down many years ago, but it was one of the big copper mining locations here locally. And Arizona is actually called the Copper State. So copper was a big story here and should do well. And I know there's an expansion. There's a lot of copper facilities now because of the price. So yeah, you have to be bullish on copper. But, you know, it's not only copper, Jim. It's all the metals. You know, not only the rare earth metal stocks that exploded. Government got behind, you know, companies like MP Materials. But you've got the other you know, depressed metals suddenly regaining momentum, like palladium and platinum, which took off big and are still very cheap compared to where they've been. So very interesting. If you're a metals person, you know, I'm not necessarily talking only gold and silver, you know, any of the base metals and so forth. This is your time in the sun. It's happening now.
What is going on with gold?
Still okay. You know, it's trending, you know, sort of sideways below its highs. You got to be positive overall. I mean, there are some indications that I mentioned, you know, that technically that you're overbought, overdone, and, you know, if the U.S. dollar is showing some signs of a rally, if the U.S. dollar starts to rally further, it could put pressure on gold short term. And after all, you had a big move in gold. So if we could see it anywhere from $300 to $500 correction potentially if the dollar really starts to rally here, and that would be within the context of a bull market, in my opinion. And I also, you know, sort of share the view that you can't always tie markets together. I mean, over the years, there have been times where the dollar rallies along with gold, or they come down together. So it has to do with other, you know, geopolitical and economic factors that are going on at the time. So it doesn't mean it has to go down, but, you know, if you look at the charts, there's room for a correction, particularly if the dollar rallies, according to many, you know, analysts out there who are watching that correlation, which I don't always subscribe to, but it is possible. So silver, however, has done better on a relative basis and is still cheap. And it looks like it may be headed into the $40 range. Been depressed for so many years. So, and of course, all the bulls are hoping it makes a new all-time high above 50 and moves on toward 100 and all these prognostications, which could happen as well. But silver's been gaining a lot of traction here recently. Which is also a sign of speculation in that market, because generally, you know, silver is considered the more speculative metal. So one could argue that because it's rallying now and it's speculative, it might be a sign that gold itself is topping out, because the more speculative metal start to rally at the end of the cycle, which in many instances is the case. So I'm not a bear, but I'm just pointing that out as a possibility in terms of setting up a correction in gold. But silver is acting well here, and we'll see how far it can go. And that $40 level is sort of a big psychological level to see if we can get through.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts,
Radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's happening on the cryptocurrency front?
Well, we've had a little bit of a pullback here the last few days. Crypto, Bitcoin, of course, the big one, got up to $122,000. And it's not trading far from that right now, 118, 119 level. It's headed to the 140s, 150s, and we'll take it from there. They're using some charts that say it could be $350,000 for a coin, potentially. So this is a time in the sun for the metal, the crypto world. We've had all that legislation come through. We've talked about this. The Genius Act, for example, just got passed in Congress. We've got the Clarity Act, which I think is still being battled out between the House and the Senate here. And there's also the anti-CBDC surveillance state act, which is also, working on that sort of, it blocks the Federal Reserve from creating their own digital currency. So that's sort of in the House, Senate, configuration right now. But the fact that, this legislation went through, we talked about this many times, it sets a legal basis for the cryptos, which didn't exist up to this point. So we also, because of the Genius Act, for example, it now is legal for a company to create a stable coin. So a stable coin is like another form of money. It's guaranteed to have a stable amount of value. I think Walmart's talking about doing it and other companies. So it actually would use that coin for transactions. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it would replace cash or credit card or your bank, and it would reduce costs in terms of the transaction and so forth and so on. So the whole stable coin issue is really a boom for a lot of businesses, because they can save a lot of money by conducting transactions using a stable coin, for example. So that's nothing to do with the other cryptos that are out there that also have potential. It's a very complicated market. We have the DR blockchain letter. We cover the market every week. It's a weekly letter, and we highlight some of the big news and what's going on in the market. And there's, dozens of very interesting coins and opportunities out there, and something you should definitely be in or take a look at. So, if you're in gold or if you're any sector like that, you might want to obviously look at something. And I still, from the smartest people that I'm in touch with, and I'm not the ultimate expert by any stretch, we're still in the early stages of the explosion in the crypto market. So you're not getting in late at all. So it sounds that way when you see Bitcoin at $122,000, when it used to be, $50 about 12, 13 years ago. But, there are other coins out there and other opportunities. So anyway, short term, acting a little bit of a correction here. I think it's temporary. And I still think you're going to see a surge to much higher levels here during the course of the year.
Now, when you said companies could produce their own stable coin, couldn't that create the same danger as what happened to the Weimar Republic in Germany in the 30s, where companies were printing their own currencies to pay their employees? And, of course, they were hit by rampant inflation, where it cost millions of marks to buy a loaf of bread. Could the same thing happen if companies start producing currency instead of the country?
Well, stable coins are designed to maintain a fixed value. So if it's pegged to a currency like the dollar. So if the dollar varies significantly, I guess the stable coin, could as well. But the whole idea is to peg it to something which, doesn't have a lot of volatility to it. So I guess the biggest danger with stablecoins is they may fail to maintain their intended peg to the underlying asset. So, you know, they can peg it to gold, they could peg it to the dollar, they could peg it to any you know, other currency if they choose to. But the whole idea is that it creates, you know, price stability, faster transactions, lower fees compared to other traditional payment methods. So, and not without risks. I'm not saying it's totally risk-free, but you could say, too, look, you know, if you have a dollar, is your dollar worth as much today as it was yesterday? And that's not the case. Your dollar has been depreciating in value, at least the U.S. dollar, that is. And your buying power has been reduced over the years because of inflation and so forth. So the same risk would apply to the stable coin. The stable coin, I guess you can almost think of as like a replacement for a credit card or a checkbook or something. It's another way to consummate a transaction. So the big companies like it because the transactions supposedly be faster, lower fees, and so forth. So we'll see, you know, how it all plays out. So this is sort of the chatter about it right now, and there's some implementing on the part of some bigger companies to get it underway. That's sort of the, the $30,000 view, $30,000 level, I should say, $30,000 feet, that level of, you know, comment about it. So you offer some benefits, and you got to accept there's some risk. And I don't think you're being forced to use them. I don't think if you walk into a Walmart, you're going to have to use a stable coin versus a credit card or a check or something. So there's going to be an education learning curve here, too. So it's out there. It's what's happening. So it's like when the Internet came in, you know, did everybody understand it? You know, how many years it took before everybody understood it and used it? This is new. This whole the crypto explosion, the legislation that just came through, this whole stablecoin thing, the value of a Bitcoin, for example, it's obviously become a major asset of the U.S. government. Apparently, billions of Bitcoins and part of this Bitcoin reserve that the government has created here in the U.S. So it's just, you know, a matter of adapting to this new reality out there. Like I'm just making a crazy comparison here, like to the Internet. It's something new. You have to sort of learn about it, adjust to it, to see if it fits your lifestyle or, you know, but, you know, the whole point of the crypto transactions, you know, is that, you know, you could be anywhere in the world. Let's say if you got a Bitcoin, you can transact business anywhere, you know, using a cell phone and a satellite connection. You don't need a bank. You don't need a checkbook. You don't need a credit card. You can pay and do transactions with digital currency. And, you know, one of the reasons it all came about is, you know, it was distrust of the governments and the fact that, you know, was your currency really worth anything? And in the case of a Bitcoin, which halves the amount out there every 4 years, or it might be 6 years, I have to double check that, it becomes more of a scarce item, and that's part of the reason why it's been appreciating in value. Very interesting. So I personally have not conducted a transaction using the Bitcoin itself. Many have, but it's definitely another means of doing business, which is really fabulous when you think about alternatives out there.
Anything interesting on the geocosmic front?
Well, as I mentioned, the new moon today, and that's something of importance, I think. One thing I did want to mention, though, you know, with regard to what's going on with the Federal Reserve and Jay Powell and so forth, that seems like the headline stories out there. And I think it's something that you got to be focusing on. Has a lot of, it's just interesting because I've been sort of anti-Federal Reserve for decades. And if you haven't read the book, and I always often refer to it in these interviews or it's mentioned in my newsletter, The Creature from Jekyll Island by G.W. Griffin, was several decades old, but talks about the creation of the Fed and what's wrong with it and a lot of secrets about the Federal Reserve, like it's really a private corporation. It's not even actually part of the government. Employees there are not paid by the government. It's done a lot of, at best described, mismanagement over the years. The claim is that the value of our currency, at least the U.S. dollar, since it was the Fed was created back in 1913, is dropping to, what, 97% in value. So right now the whole story is whether Jay Powell, the Fed chairman, is going to resign or be fired or just going to be a lame duck until Donald Trump replaces him, which is next summer. I mean, this is significant stuff because the whole point is if rates really need to come down or should come down, it would save the U.S. government billions in dollars in interest payments. Yeah. And the fact that these are high is hurting, you know, Donald Trump's plan to keep the economy moving forward. And one interesting story is Mohamed El-Erian. He's one of the top economists out there. And he actually came out with a comment that says Powell should resign to preserve Fed independence. And the reason for that is the fact that he's not resigning or Fed rates aren't coming down. There's more and more chatter about not necessarily abolishing the Federal Reserve, which I'm all for, but I think we should have a free market. But and many would listen to this and disagree, but his concern is that because we're having all this chatter back and forth about it, it's raising the question about the continuation of the Fed in its present form. And there has been talk in U.S. Congress about not necessarily abolishing the Fed, which they could easily do because they created it back in 1913, but, you know, amended powers and supervision, and a lot of things could happen. And I would think that'd be great if that did happen, but Mohamed's point in being a top economist coming out and asking Powell to consider stepping down is all this turmoil going on in the U.S., and this is a big story here, with regard to interest rates, you know, again, creates this cloud over the institution itself. And he's concerned that the institution could be in jeopardy, which is, no problem for me, but just as a more conservative economist, that's his view. So rates are coming down one way or another. And, the story out there is, where this is the way the market's reacting, and I'm extending this interview probably longer than you wanted, but when there was talk about Powell resigning or quitting and rates coming down, short-term rates coming down, the bond market actually declined, the big bond market, the long-term bonds, and that drove rates up. So the free market of bonds, which is the biggest market in the world, bigger than the stock market, the fact that it didn't like the fact that we would force Powell to lower rates now, it was very interesting. So in other words, the big bond market is saying, we're not ready for rates to come down so fast. Show us the evidence. So this is sort of the conflict that's going on right now, which is really, really fascinating. It's the old tail wagging the dog. The bond market is long-term rates, and the Fed controls the short-term rate. But the Fed, the long-term rates, don't want the short-term rate to come down because they don't feel that this is the right time to happen. This whole conflict about Powell and the interest rates and his resignation and all this nonsense going on is really, really, really interesting about how it's all going to play out. So, and then, of course, we're not even talking about what other things the Fed does, M2 money supply, and all kinds of shenanigans they've been involved with over the years. When the Freedom of Information Act came out, and we found out they were doing some crazy things like funding private companies. So, one of the things that really needs to happen is an audit of the Fed to see really what shenanigans they've been up to, which is reason for concern on my part than many others. So we'll see how it all plays out. Just an interesting story, because for literally decades, I've been influenced by that book I just mentioned, The Creature from Jekyll Island. You got to read it. About 400 and some pages, but the history of the Fed and some of the stories in there talk about how when it was created, the shares of ownership in the corporation are by the banks themselves. It's a private corporation, so the banks supposedly own it. It's not a federal agency. It's an independent agency doing what it wants to do. So a lot of stories, and I'm belaboring the question here, but very interesting times. So let's see how it all plays out, Jim. Very interesting times.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.